Chazal and many of the Rishonim give reasons why the Torah spent so much time and detail telling us how Avraham Avinu bought Ma'aras HaMachpelah. The many things in the Torah that the Torah says very concisely. And here the Torah, out of character, spent a lot of time going into this transaction. Why? So let me first list for you some of the ideas, and then what's it called, I want to apply it to something that's relevant on a day-to-day basis. In the Medrash says that it says B'nei Ches 10 times in this parsha, in the parsha of the buying of the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, and that comes to teach me kol ha-mevarer mikcho shaloso tzadik. A person, mevarer means to crystallize, to clarify the transaction of that tzadik, Avraham Avinu, is like he, observed or fulfilled the Ten Commandments. In other words, having a connection to a monetary transaction that Avraham Avinu did is like fulfilling the Ten Commandments. And I think the idea being the Ten Commandments are the foundation or the essence of what the Torah is. All of the Torah is hinted to in the Ten Commandments. So the Ten Commandments are the essence of the Torah. And the essence of the Torah is putting it into practice in every aspect. And therefore, what's it called, the monetary transaction of a tzaddik, how he accomplishes it, with what emunah he accomplishes it, with what intention it spans the whole Torah. Everything, between man and man, between man and God. That's why in the future it says that when a person comes to his judgment after death, they ask him six questions. The first question is, Nasato v'nasasa be'emuna. Did you deal honestly in business, in your business transactions? Did you deal honestly and with faith? The next question is, Kovate itim l'Torah. Did you set aside time for learning Torah? And I think the idea is that before we can really know if the person's learning Torah was authentic, we have to know how he applied it into real life. How did he deal in his monetary? Did you really believe in God? Then you wouldn't cheat other people. You wouldn't lie, right? If you really believe what the purpose of the world was, you would deal honestly with your monetary thing. You wouldn't make that the main thing of your life. You deal with it as a means to reach an end, to be able to support yourself and to live the kind of life that you were supposed to live, and not necessarily do it because you wanted to make your whole life revolve around money, right? And therefore, the functioning in a monetary way, with emunah, with faith, right, is a very, very important foundation to know that everything else a person did, he did the proper way. In addition, sometimes the greatest test of a person is how he deals with monetary issues, because that is a measure of a person. It says you can tell a person three ways: the kiso, the kaso, uvekoso. With his pocket, in other words, his money, that's when a person to a certain degree shows his real self. And when he drinks wine, and when he gets angry. Right? A person gets angry or doesn't get angry when he's drunk, you can tell what he really is. And same thing when he deals with money, you can tell what he really is. And therefore, according to some opinions, the last test of Avraham Avinu was not the Akedah. The last test of Avraham Avinu was the fact that he had to pay an exorbitant amount to bury his wife, despite the fact that God promised him this land was going to be his. So everybody asks him, what could be worse than the Akedah? What, once he passed that test, how could there be another test? This was like the culmination. The answer is very simple. And that is, it says in Kriya Shema, you should love the Rabbanu Shalom b'chol nafshecha, b'chol moldecha, b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol moldecha. Levavcha means with your Yetzer HaTov and your Yetzer Hara, with all of your inclinations. L'nafshecha means even if God will take away your soul, you have to give your life for God. And moldecha is you have to give your money. So the Gemara asks, I mean, if you already know you have to give your life, why does the Torah have to say you have to give your money? Because there are some people whose money is more important than their life. Sometimes giving of your money is more of an essay and it's more of a test than even giving your life. Money to some people is so important that they'd rather give up their life. We used to see people sacrifice their life for their money. People who overwork and neglect their families, neglect their health, or just to make another dollar or another shekel. So the test of money is a very, very big test. So therefore, what's it called? The Torah spent a lot of time telling us about this transaction to let us know that the monetary dealings of a tzaddik are the essence of the Torah. And what's it called? And this was a test for Avraham Avinu also, how he's going to deal monetarily with something that is going to cost him a lot of money. And the Chasam Sofer adds that the test also included the fact that his first kinyan in Eretz Yisrael, his first acquisition in Eretz Yisrael, as a promise that God told him, this is going to be your land, he had to buy a grave for his wife. That was also something that was heartrending, that his first should have been a very big simcha to acquire a portion in Eretz Yisrael. And here the first portion that he acquired was a grave for his wife. So that is what's called one reason why the Torah spent so much time to give over this lesson. The Ibn Ezra says two ideas why the Torah spent so much time transmitting this incident. First, the Torah wanted to tell us the mile of Eretz Yisrael, the Chaim Ulamesim, wanted to tell us the greatness of Eretz Yisrael, the benefit of Eretz Yisrael, for not only the living, even the dead. It's even beneficial for a person who's no longer here to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. That's how important it is, not only to live in Eretz Yisrael, even to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. And that, what's it called? And that Eretz Yisrael became Avraham Avinu's nachala, it became his inheritance by buying this grave site in Eretz Yisrael. It was the first place that he bought in Eretz Yisrael that became his. So those are the two lessons the Ibn Ezra says. The Ramban asks on this Ibn Ezra that it doesn't make sense. First of all, how do we see the greatness of Eretz Yisrael for the living and the dead if Sari Menu died in Eretz Yisrael? Of course he's going to bury in Eretz Yisrael. They can take her body somewhere else. The fact that he buried in Eretz Yisrael is no proof that Eretz Yisrael has great benefits for burying the dead there. Because he didn't bring her there from somewhere else. He buried her where she died. So it was obvious that he had to bury her here. He didn't go to the bother and the expense because of Eretz Yisrael. He went to the bother and expense because this is where she died. Had he brought her to Eretz Yisrael from somewhere else, maybe you'd see that lesson. That's the Ramban's question on the Ibn Ezra. And the same thing he says, God promised him the whole land. The fact that he had one little portion of the land, is that the fulfillment of God's promise? That here the Torah goes into length to tell us how God fulfilled his promise to give Avram Eretz Yisrael as a nachla, as an inheritance. So we explained here, in fact, I think maybe last year, some other time, at great length, which I'm not going to do again now, what the Ibn Ezra really means. There is a concept of Eretz Yisrael, there's a concept of the Holy Land, Eretz HaKodesh. This land is the Holy Land from the time that the world was created. It has special skulos, special attributes that this land has. And there's a mitzvah to live here. Avraham Avinu lived here before it was Eretz Yisrael, when it was Eretz Canaan. But there's an extra added kedusha that can be added to this land when it belongs to the Jewish people. And even more when we are settled here, and most of the Jewish people are settled here in the places, the proper places where they're supposed to be, each one according to their tribe. That adds holiness. And in fact, the laws of Truma, Maaser, Mitzvos HaKliyos Ba'aretz, the agricultural laws of Eretz Israel, don't apply unless Jews have control of the land. Either because we conquered it in the time of Yoshua, or we took authority over it. We were given it by the Persians the second time we came here. Right? As long as we have control over the land, it's connected to the Jewish people, it has extra holiness. When it doesn't have that connection, the holiness is diminished. It always remains the holy land, and it has certain attributes to it. And there's a mitzvah to live here. But the fact that the produce that grows here has all of the halachas that apply is only when it's Eretz Shel Yisrael. That's called Eretz Yisrael. So basically what the Ibn Ezra is saying is the following. Avraham Avinu could have taken a grave without buying it. And it would have been a place to bury Sarah, and that's what they were willing to give him. In the beginning they said, we will be happy to let you use our cemetery space to bury your wife. But Avraham said, no, I want to buy a plot, that she should be buried in the plot that I buy. And the reason for that is that he wanted that part of Eretz HaKodesh, that part of Eretz Canaan, should become Eretz Yisrael, the land that is connected to the Jew. Avraham already was called Yisrael. So then it became Eretz Yisrael. So the Torah tells us that Avraham Avinu went to a lot of bother and a lot of expense to actually buy that land, where he could have gotten it right as a right of usage, because he wanted to make it Eretz Yisrael. And we see from there the value, the benefit of Eretz Yisrael for the living and the dead. Not Eretz Canaan. Chaka could have buried her in the Holy Land, in that same place, but it wouldn't be Eretz Yisrael had he not bought it. So he went to a tremendous expense and bother to make that land not just Eretz Canaan, but to make it Eretz Yisrael by bonding it to himself. And and that's the idea of the Nachla. Here God began to fulfill his word that Eretz Yisrael would be an inheritance for the Jewish people. In other words, it would bond with the Jewish people. It'd be something they couldn't be separated from. And he saw that already and in this model, in this example of buying Maaris HaMachpelah, because it says in the Torah, right, Vayakom Shtei Ephraim, the field was elevated. How was it elevated? Avraham saw that when he bonded himself to this field, to this burial plot, the holiness was higher. He could sense that it became holy. So he saw that this land and his neshama, and Memela, the neshama of his children, would be able to bond together and attach themselves to each other, and that would be his inheritance. So here's the place where already God proved that this was going to be an inheritance for the Jewish people, and the souls of the Jewish people and the soul of the land would eventually bond together. So that's the Ibn Ezra, those two reasons. The Ramban says another idea. He says that here we see the fulfillment of another promise that God made. Not the promise of giving him Eretz Israel, because he only got one little portion here, and he had to pay for it. But the fulfillment of Va'agad Lo Shmecha. God promised that he would raise up Avram's name in the eyes of the nations of the world, and he would be in their eyes like a king, a prince. And we see here that that's how the people spoke to him. They called him our master. They referred to him as Nesi Elohim, you are the Prince of God amongst us. We see that Avraham Avinu, God fulfilled with him, V'agad lo shemecha, I'll make your name great, right, in the eyes of the nations of the world. They spoke to him with such respect, he didn't speak to them like that. He spoke to them nicely, but he didn't call them his master or the Prince of God. Only they called him that. So this idea of respect that God promised Avraham from the nations of the world was fulfilled over here. And also the Ramban adds another reason why the Torah went into such detail is to let us know how important it is to know the burial place of your forefathers, to respect it, honor it, consider it important, right? That's why the Torah told us how Avraham Avinu bought this burial plot, and there is the burial plot of our Avos. Eventually all of them were buried there, a good portion of them, and to let us know that venerating the burial plot of one's parents is an important thing. And lastly, the Chafetz Chaim says that we learn from this parsha and how much Avram toiled to buy a burial plot for himself eventually, for his wife at that point, right, is important for a person to own the plot that he's buried in. It should be his. It's an important thing that a tzaddik, or anybody, be buried in their own land, not in somebody else's portion. And just like in Olam Haba, every tzaddik has his own area, right? His own space. So too, his body should have its own space in this world, and not be buried in somebody else's plot. Okay, now, so that's the first part of this class. I just gave you a survey, overview of the reasons and the lessons that we can learn from this parsha of the buying of Marisa Machpelah. Okay. Now, I want to go to the Ikra. We learn from this parsha how marriage is affected. How do you create a marriage? Okay. All the Torah says is ki yikach ish isha, when a man will take a woman. Now, that doesn't describe how the taking is supposed to be. You're supposed to knock her over her head with the club and drag her by her hair into your cave? How do you take her? Right? It says take a woman, take a wife. How do you do it? So the Chazal say that there are three ways, okay? And the way that we actually do is kesef. You give a woman something of value, something worth money, a minimum of a pruta, of one pruta, which is about 5 agurot, and you say hareat mikudeshesli in front of witnesses, and that creates a marriage. She's married now, married woman, okay? Where do we know that from? How do you know that giving the woman something of value, right, money, or something worth money, affects that marriage, and now she's a married woman, okay? So how do you know the word says ki yikach? When you take her, it means this. So we learn it from this parsha. Because in this parsha it says, kesef hasade kach mimeni. Take the money for the field. And the Gemara says that when God dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu to write these words, he told him, you should know I'm using the same terminology here, kach, on the money, to tell you that when I use the word ki yikach, taking a wife, it means with money. It's called the gzeirah shavah. It's one of the 13 principles of how we learn things in the Torah. This is God's principles. And when God gave the Torah, he told Moshe Rabbeinu, these two words are going to be used to learn one from the other. Just like here it says ki yikach, here it says kicha, taking by money. You should know the way to take over here is the same way over here. Now, on the surface, this would seem to imply that taking a woman is like taking a field. And it's like buying a piece of real estate. A woman is just chattel, right? You buy her like you buy a field, which reduces a woman to a piece of dirt, right? So what I just told you with the Ibn Ezra, again, I think last year we went to great detail of showing what this parsha is really all about. It's the idea that Avram didn't want to buy a piece of real estate. He wanted to buy this land so his wife could be buried in Eretz Yisrael, not in Eretz Canaan. By buying it, he attached it to his soul. He bonded his soul with it and elevated it to Eretz Yisrael. So that is what marriage is, right? The marriage is the bonding of two souls through something of value. The word kesef comes from the word kisufim. Kisufim means to desire something, something that's desirable. When you give something that's desirable, something that's of value to you, and you give it to someone else, it creates a bond, and it shows that the person or the thing is desirable to you, and you bond your neshama with it. And therefore, over here, the entire purpose is Avraham Avinu didn't want a field. He wasn't in the market for real estate. He wanted to make sure that his wife was buried in a place that had the din of Eretz Yisrael. In other words, that this land was bonded to him, and therefore was elevated to the designation of Eretz Yisrael, the land that belongs to a Jew. And that land, when it belongs to a Jew, is elevated in its holiness. And then my wife will benefit by being buried there. So he elevated the land by attaching it to him, and then the land elevated them by them being on it or in it. So that's what marriage is. Two souls bonding and attaching to each other, and each one perfecting the other one. That's exactly what this transaction was, and therefore we will learn marriage from this transaction. That is what the Ibn Ezra, and that's what he means, it became a nachala. It became an inheritance. The two bonded, they can't be separated. That's the neshamas that bond and never can be separated. That is the, under normal circumstances, that's the, what's it called, the implication of this parsha when it comes to marriage. And now I want to say that the other reasons why the Torah said this parsha also can shed light on marriage. Each one. Let's see the one that it says that, what's it called, that, Yaakov Avinu, the first acquisition of Eretz Yisrael was to bury his wife, okay? And that was a nisayon for him. It was a tsar. It was a tremendous grief that he had to, what's it called, acquire his first acquisition, Eretz Yisrael, to be a burial place for his wife. And I think that that teaches us also that when a person gets married and he gives over that ring, he should be remember where was that money given? Where do I know this halacha from? From the fact that Avraham Avinu buried his wife in Eretz Yisrael, right? So a person, when he gets married, should realize that life is short. And eventually, either he's going to be buried or she's going to be buried, and it's not going to last forever. And therefore, make the most of it. Because if life would be unlimited, then people would take it for granted. But since it's there's a law of supply and demand. The less available something is, the more valuable it is. If life is short, you don't have an unlimited supply, then don't squander it. Don't waste it. In fact, there's a Gemara that says that this is an important feeling when you get married, to realize that this is not an open-ended, unlimited, life. You're going to have a life together that has limits on it, and therefore make the most of it. In fact, it says that's why death was introduced after the sin of Adam and Chava, right? Because, because Adam and Chava dealt capriciously with their life. They transgressed what God said. And therefore God said, I'm going to give you a limited life, and then maybe you'll appreciate it more. And you'll use it better because you will know that it's not unlimited. You don't have all the time in the world. You have a certain amount of time, make the better use of it. You'll realize it's important. So there's a Gemara that says that at a wedding, one of the rabbis, asked one of the rabbis to compose a song that they should sing in honor of the Chasan and Kala. So he said, okay, here's my song. Vaylon de Mislan. Vey, we're all going to die. And they said, okay, what's the chorus? They said, where's the Torah and mitzvahs that we're going to take along with us? Now, that doesn't sound like a real, happy, really, upbeat chasana song, right? But the idea is that's what makes the marriage, really puts it into perspective. You're not going to live forever. You're embarking now on a new life together. Realize that it's limited, and you have to make the most of it. And the way to make the most of it is to take and put in as much Torah and mitzvahs as you can. So that gives value and importance to this marriage. It makes it even a happier occasion because you're doing something that has real meaning to it, and that you have a chance to accomplish something, and it's not open-ended, it's not unlimited. Okay, and beyond that, right, let's extend that to the other thing that it says, the Chafetz Chaim, that a person should own his burial plot, where he's buried, should be his. And what does that teach me? That the only thing you remain with that's yours in this world is the place where you're buried. Everything else, right, you lose ownership of when you die. The only thing that you really own in perpetuity in this world is the place where you're buried. That should make an impression on a person as to what this world is all about. Everything in this world is temporary, right? Except for the fact that you're going to be buried in the place that you will continue owning until Tchiyas HaMeisim. So the only thing that's going to go with you till Tchiyas HaMeisim is your burial plot. So, and the other hand, the place, just like you have a place for your body in this world till Tchiyas HaMeisim, you have a place for your soul till Tchiyas HaMeisim in another world. And that's also yours. But here you buy it with money, and there you buy it with Torah and mitzvahs. So it has to be yours, right? It can't be, nobody else is going to give it to you. You have to earn it. You have to buy it. So the place for your body has to be bought, the place for your soul has to be bought. So that is an important, if you want to have shalom bayis, if you want to have a real meaningful marriage, you have to understand what life is all about. That it's short, that it's important, you have to make the most of it, and ultimately you have to buy the place where you're going to be after you leave this world, physically and spiritually. And then marriage will become something that that is important enough that you won't let the little things bother you. Because if you let the little unimportant things bother you, you're going to always be fighting and squabbling over nourishment. But if you realize that life is so important and it's so short, and you have to fill it with important things, then why waste time squabbling over unimportant things? That will induce shalom bayis. Okay? It's interesting also that we learned the second aspect of how marriage is affected with a shtar, with a document. You can give a woman a document that says, Harei at mekudeshesli, right? And give it to her and say, with this document, you're married to me. The two witnesses sign the document, and it's given over, and that's also, even if the document isn't worth anything, it's written on a piece of paper, it's worth less than 5 agorot. So it's not with money that you're marrying her, you're marrying with the document. How do we know that? We know that from the fact that you divorce a wife with a document. So when you're getting married, if you're getting married with a document, if you're getting married with money, you're remembering how short life is. This parsha was Avram burying his wife. Right, it's the fact that you have to have your burial place should be yours. You're the one who owns it. That's basically all you own in the end in this world. Also, if you marry her with a document, you're remembering about divorce. Same idea. Marriage is very fragile. You know, it could end in a divorce. So why don't you make the most of it and see that it lasts and doesn't end like that? So the reminders at the beginning are what the end is going to be. Eventually, when are you going to bury each other? And hopefully, after a long time, and not on a daily basis, right? Sometimes that's what marriage is. Everybody try to bury the other one on a regular basis. But this is hopefully a one-time burial, right? At the end, and if you marry her with a document, remember this could end in divorce. So make it work. That's another lesson that has to do with marriage from this parsha. Okay. Now, the last thing is most marital problems, most absence of shalom bayis comes over monetary things, over money. Most fights in the home are either directly about money or indirectly because of the lack of money in the house or people using money the wrong way or whatever, right? Or lack of independence by the husband or the wife, usually the wife, but it could be the husband too, where one of them controls all the finances and the other one has to come begging for a penny, you know, if they want to buy something or whatever, and they feel like they have no independence, they're not a mensch or whatever. So most marital fights are over money matters. And therefore, the parsha that we learn Kiddushin from was put in the Torah to tell us how important and how holy monetary matters have to be. How a tzaddik deals with his monetary matters in the most pure and holy way. Okay? And that it's an nisayon, it's a tremendous nisayon. That's why a husband, when he writes the ksuba to his wife, puts in there, I will work, and I will support, and I will feed you. All monetary things, right, that have to be taken care of. So, therefore, the parsha from which we learn marriage is a parsha from which we learn the importance of dealing in monetary things properly, and the real purpose of applying the Torah to the most mundane and monetary things. That's the essence of the Torah. How do you deal and live the Torah in your monetary life, in your economic life. And lastly, it says that what's it called? No, not lastly, second to lastly. We said that the idea is that this parasha teaches me that Avraham Avinu was respected by the nations of the world, and God promised him that he would get that respect. We learn from there that respect is an important thing, that having self-esteem and being respected is important to a person. Otherwise, why would God promise Avraham Avinu that the world would respect him? It's a Kiddush Hashem, because respecting him respects what he stands for. So when a person gets married, he should realize that giving the other, his mate, respect is a very, very important thing. And a husband has to respect his wife, and a wife has to respect her husband. Because we learn from this parsha how God fulfilled his word of seeing to it that Avraham Avinu was respected by the nations of the world. So we learn from here the concept of how important respect is and being respected. So that's an important ingredient in marriage too. And lastly, right, we learn from this parsha, like we said, the importance of venerating the place where your forefathers are buried and honoring parents even after death. Because the concept of a family, parents and children, and Mesorah and tradition, right, which is only kept up if you respect the ones that came before you. You respect your parents not only when they're alive, but even after death. And therefore, people have to be the kind of parents that deserve that respect. So this engenders in a marriage taking seriously what kind of parents you're going to be and how you'll respect the tradition that was given to you and handed over to your children. So that's another reason why marriage is learned from this parsha. Because this is the parsha that teaches us the importance of family, of children, parents, the respect between them, the idea of passing over from parents to children, the Mesorah, the tradition. So you will put marriage into perspective if you learn it from this parsha, because this parsha teaches me how important it is to venerate your parents even after they're dead, and to recognize where you came from, what your roots are, where they're buried, the burial place of the avos. That's also an important ingredient in marriage. So the fact that the Torah spent so much time speaking about this, and it's important each idea itself, but it's even more important in being applied to what we learn from this parasha, marriage. Applying those principles to marriage also are a very important thing. They're important in their global, universal meaning, but the fact that we learn marriage from this parasha makes it even more specifically important and applicable to marriage.